90 minutes. New York to London in 90 minutes. That is what a company called Hermias is promising. And when I first heard that number, my reaction was the same as yours probably is right now. I've heard this before. Beautiful renders, venture capital deck, vague timeline, gone in 4 years. So I went deep on the engineering, and what I found changed my mind about whether this one is different. I'm Vector on Clear Direct, here on Radio Hangar. Today, I want to break down what Hermias is actually building, why the specific problem they are trying to solve has defeated every serious attempt for 6 decades, and where this program honestly sits between breakthrough and vaporware. Let's start with a number, Mach 5. The Concorde, the last commercial aircraft to carry passengers above the speed of sound, flew at Mach 2.04, roughly 1,300 miles per hour. It crossed the Atlantic in 3.5 hours. It retired in 2003. In the 23 years since, commercial aviation has moved backward in one sense. We fly slower per seat today than Concorde passengers did. We just do it more economically. Boom. Supersonic is trying to bring back Mach 1.7 with the Overture. That is supersonic, and it is real progress. But Hermias is not talking about supersonic. Hermias is talking about Mach 5, roughly 3,800 miles per hour. That is hypersonic. And the engineering gap between supersonic and hypersonic is not incremental. It is categorical. Here is what most people miss when they hear a big speed number. The jump from subsonic to supersonic is hard, shock waves, sonic booms, wave drag, structural heating, serious problems, solved problems. We have had supersonic military aircraft since 1947. The SR-71 Blackbird flew operational missions at Mach 3.2 for decades. The problem was never whether Mach 3 was physically possible. The problem was whether you could build an aircraft that flies that fast economically and repeatedly without destroying itself. Now, when you push past Mach 4, something more fundamental breaks. Your jet engine stops working. Let me break this down. A conventional jet engine ingests air, compresses it mechanically in a rotating compressor, mixes it with fuel, burns it, and exhausts the result. That compression stage is everything. It creates the pressure and oxygen density you need for efficient combustion. At Mach 5, the air entering your inlet is already traveling at extraordinary velocity. When you slow that air down to feed it into a compressor, the deceleration converts kinetic energy into heat. We are talking about inlet temperatures approaching 1,000 degrees Celsius just from the aerodynamic heating of slowing the incoming air. Run that through a compressor with spinning titanium blades and you will melt your engine. The thermodynamics simply do not allow a conventional turbojet or turbofan above roughly Mach 3 to Mach 4, depending on the design. This is where something called a ramjet takes over. A ramjet has no moving parts at all. It uses the forward velocity of the aircraft itself to ram air into the combustion chamber at the pressure needed for combustion. You do not compress mechanically. The ram effect of high-speed flight does the work. At Mach 4 and above, a ramjet is not just functional, it is the most efficient propulsion option available. But here is the fundamental problem with ramjets. They require forward motion to function. You cannot start a ramjet from a standing start. You cannot taxi out of a gate, advance the throttle, and rotate on a ramjet. A ramjet needs to be moving at roughly Mach 2.5 to 3 before it can develop usable thrust. So you have a gap. Turbojets work from 0 to around Mach 2.5. Ramjets work from roughly Mach 2.5 upward. But the transition window, that band from Mach 2 to Mach 4, is an engineering no man's land. In that window, your turbojet is overheating and losing efficiency, and your ramjet is not yet generating enough thrust to accelerate through to where it can sustain flight. This transition problem has blocked every serious attempt at hypersonic commercial aviation for 60 years. The X-30, the National Aerospace Plane Program, the NASP, which Congress funded through the 1980s before canceling it. Various classified programs all ran into the same wall. Getting through the transition regime cleanly, without a catastrophic loss of thrust, is extraordinarily hard. The solution Hermias is pursuing is called a turbine-based combined cycle engine. Their version is called the Chimera. The concept is this. You build an engine that contains both a turbine core and a ramjet section. At low speed, you operate in turbine mode like a normal jet. As you accelerate toward Mach 3, you begin transitioning airflow to the ramjet section. The turbine core is mechanically isolated from the hot incoming air, and the ramjet takes over thrust production. By the time you're through Mach 4, you're running purely on ramjet, accelerating toward Mach 5 cruise. The turbine core in the Chimera is based on a General Electric J85. That is the same engine that has powered the T-38 Talon two-seat jet trainer for the Air Force since the 1960s. It is a well-understood, proven turbine core. Hermaeus did not try to design a new turbine from scratch. They took something that works and engineered a combined cycle architecture around it. This segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones: first solo private pilot, instrument rated, CFI, the whole journey. Beautifully made and built to last, AviationSoul.com. Now the demonstrator program. Hermaeus is not trying to build the commercial aircraft first and prove the physics later. They built a four-vehicle unmanned demonstrator sequence called Quarter Horse. Each variant is designed to expand the envelope incrementally. Quarter Horse Mark 1 flew in the summer of 2023 at a test site in Georgia. That first flight was subsonic, deliberately. The goal was not speed, the goal was to validate the airframe, the flight control software, the ground operations infrastructure, and the telemetry systems. You do not learn anything useful about Mach 5 aerodynamics if your ground station crashes before you reach Mach 1. So they flew subsonic and they learned. The data tells an interesting story about how this team approaches development. They are methodical in a way that reflects where these founders came from. The core Hermaeus team are largely SpaceX veterans. Their chief executive, AJ Piplica, worked on propulsion at SpaceX. Their chief technology officer, Glenn Case, was there as well. They watched the iterative approach work at SpaceX, where each Falcon 9 version flew, generated data was improved, and flew again. They are applying that philosophy to hypersonic flight tests. Mark 3 is the quarter horse variant intended to push into genuine high-speed ramjet territory. If the transition sequence works in flight test, that is the engineering milestone that makes everything downstream possible. The commercial aircraft is called the Halcyon, and this is where I want to be precise about what we know versus what is still on paper. The Chimera engine exists, ground testing has been done, quarter horse has flown. The Halcyon is a design concept, a serious one, with detailed engineering behind it, but it has not turned metal yet. It is important to hold that distinction clearly. The Halcyon is designed to carry 20 passengers at Mach 5 cruise. The cruise altitude would be around 95,000 feet. For context, the Concorde cruised at roughly 60,000 feet. Commercial airliners are typically between 35,000 and 41,000 feet. 95,000 feet is near the boundary between the stratosphere and the mesosphere. The sky above you begins to look dark, not blue. You're at the edge of the atmosphere in a meaningful sense, at that altitude and speed. The leading edges of the aircraft experience temperatures approaching 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Standard aluminum structures are not viable. You are looking at titanium alloys, high-temperature composites, and possibly ceramic components in the hottest zones. The windows are a specific design challenge. Concorde used very small windows precisely because large windows at high temperature and pressure differentials create structural problems that are difficult to solve. A Mach 5 aircraft at 95,000 feet will face more extreme conditions than Concorde ever did. The sonic boom question is one I want to address honestly because it has significant implications for the route network. Concorde was banned from supersonic cruise over the continental United States and over Europe because of the sonic boom. You can fly supersonic over open ocean. You cannot do it over populated areas without rattling windows and generating massive regulatory and community opposition. The Federal Aviation Administration has had that prohibition in place for decades, and there is no credible path to reversing it for a Mach 5 aircraft. What this means practically is that the Halcyon's initial business case is built around transoceanic routes: New York to London, Los Angeles to Tokyo, San Francisco to Singapore, routes where you cruise over open ocean at speed and slow down before you reach any coastline. That is not a fatal constraint. Those are among the highest value routes in commercial aviation, but it does limit the market. The ticket price question is another honest conversation. 20 seats at Mach 5 to London is not a product you sell for $3,000. You're looking at pricing in the tens of thousands of dollars per seat, perhaps higher in the early years of operation. The market for that product exists. It is the ultra-premium tier that currently flies transatlantic on private jets, or the senior executive or investor who genuinely values arriving in London for a morning meeting rather than landing exhausted after a 7-hour overnight. For those passengers, 90 minutes versus 7 hours is not a marginal upgrade. It is a different mode of transportation. But 20 seats is not a sustainable business at any ticket price. The scale question is real. Here is what Hermias has right in their strategy that I think deserves credit, and it connects back to the SpaceX heritage. They are not funding this exclusively on venture capital and passenger ticket projections. They have United States Air Force contracts. The Air Force has a doctrine interest in hypersonic point-to-point transport, the ability to move small numbers of special operations personnel or critical cargo anywhere on Earth in under 2 hours. Hermias has received research and development contracts for that application. That government revenue funds the maturation of the engine technology without being entirely dependent on airline orders that may be 10 or 15 years away. This is the same model that commercial space used successfully. SpaceX matured the Falcon 9 on NASA cargo contracts. Commercial crew funded Crew Dragon development. Government money de-risked the program long enough for the commercial market to develop. Hermias is following that playbook deliberately, and the founders understand why it works. So where does this program realistically stand? In the near term, the next 2 to 3 years, the critical test is the Chimera engine transition in actual flight. Ground tests and wind tunnel data are necessary but not sufficient. The transition regime has to be demonstrated at speed, at altitude, in real flight conditions. Every hypersonic flight test program has produced surprises in measured data that the models did not predict. Shock-shock interactions. Inlet instability at off-design conditions, aerothermal loads that were higher or lower than computed. You do not eliminate those surprises in simulation. You find them when you fly in. In the medium term, 5 to 8 years, if the engine validates in quarter horse, the next challenge is a full Mach 5 vehicle, demonstrating sustained cruise and controlled deceleration. Sustained hypersonic flight in a vehicle that then has to decelerate cleanly and land is a different problem than a quick dash through Mach 5 and recovery. In the longer term, a decade or more, certification of a Mach 5 commercial passenger aircraft is genuinely unprecedented territory. The FAA has no regulatory framework for this category of vehicle. They will have to build one using data from the demonstrator program, probably in coordination with European and international aviation authorities. That process is slow even under ideal conditions, and these are not ideal conditions. There is no prior certified vehicle to reference. I hold all of this in my head at the same time. The engineering is real. The team is credible. The strategy is smart. And this is a hard program in a regime where every prior attempt has failed to reach commercial service. The comparison I keep coming back to is the early jet age. In 1943, if you had asked an engineer whether commercial jet airliners would be crossing the Atlantic within 15 years, most would have called you optimistic. The Boeing 707 entered transatlantic service in 1958, 15 years from serious military jet development to routine commercial passenger service. That period included the Comet disasters, a complete redesign of pressurized fuselage structures, and the development of entirely new maintenance and certification frameworks. The hypersonic commercial era might follow a similar arc. Military programs mature the technology. The certification data gets built slowly. The first commercial service is expensive, exclusive, and narrow in route coverage. Then it becomes normal. Or the transition regime proves harder than any model predicts. The certification timeline outruns investor patience, and the Halcyon joins the list of brilliant concept aircraft that never carried a revenue passenger. I genuinely do not know which outcome is more probable. I'm not sure anyone does. What I do know is that Concorde left a gap when it retired that has never been filled. Every year since 2003, passengers crossing the Atlantic have done so at exactly the same speed their grandparents did. The physics of Mach 5 commercial flight is not forbidden. The engineering is being worked on right now in Atlanta by people who built rocket engines for a living before they started this. Whether it is the Halcyon that fills the gap, or whether the Chimera engine technology eventually ends up under a larger vehicle designed by someone else, I think the hypersonic commercial era is coming. The question is whether it arrives within our flying careers or the generation after ours. My sources for this segment include Aviation Week and Space Technology, the detailed coverage from the War Zone on hypersonic propulsion programs, and Hermias' own published technical papers along with publicly available Air Force contract documentation. All worth reading if you want to go deeper on the engineering. RadioHangar.com for more. I'm Vector. Fly safe.